Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Hello, and welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. This episode, you're going to hear about this month's new releases in Christian romantic suspense. I hope you will enjoy hearing from your favorite romantic suspense authors as they talk about the background of their latest books.
I'm delighted to welcome back Mary Alford with her latest romantic suspense, Amish Country Killer. So welcome back, Mary.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here, Sarah.
So what past experience has had the most impact on making your heroine who she is today in this story?
Well, as a teenager, Diana Fisher's mother abandoned her and her father, and it changed Diana's life dramatically. Greta left a note claiming that she no longer wanted to be a wife or mother. Since then, Diana has always wondered what she did to make her mother not love her. And it's one of the reasons why Diana chose to take the position as chief of police of Rachel's Crossing, Kentucky. That's her old hometown. She's actually come back to try to see if she can find some answers there, and she's hoping that maybe some of her mother's friends from the past might remember Greta and can give her some insight into Greta's mindset during those years. Because there's been no contact from Greta at all through the years, there's been no work history on her social security number. It's simply as if she's disappeared, and that's something that Diana just can't accept. She needs closure for herself.
Yeah, that's, I can totally understand why. So I love that. That's a great backstory. So what about your hero? What's his biggest regret in this story?
Michael Nisley was once a young Amish man living in the Rachel's Crossing community, and he planned to marry an Amish woman, but she disappeared. At the time, there had been a series of disappearances of young Amish women, and none of them were ever found. Michael regrets not trying harder to find Tessa, because the night that she disappeared, they had argued, and he had left her up on the mountain with some other young people from the community. But that was the last time he ever saw her, and he has carried the guilt of not trying harder to find her. So Micah ends up leaving the Amish community and the Amish faith, and he becomes a Kentucky Department of Criminal Investigations detective, where he helps solve crimes such as Tessa's. And he comes back to the community from time to time because he's restoring his old family homestead. But at the time when he's there, there's Diana, the new chief of police, is attacked, and also another young woman is attacked. So that's how he meets Diana, and that's where the story really begins.
Again, great backstory. I just love hearing. I love that we get to share with our listeners some of these interesting kind of motivations for our hero and heroine. But let's switch to the villain. And what's one redeeming quality about your villain in this story?
Okay. Well, he is actually a serial killer that has come back to his old hunting grounds to kill again. But he does have a redeeming quality in that he does have the ability to care, or at least he has the ability to care about one person.
Ah, yeah. That is a good redeem. I know you can't give any more away, but that's a great, yeah, that's a good redeeming quality.
Yeah.
For you, what was the biggest challenge in writing the book in this setting?
Well, I really loved writing about this small mountain community in Kentucky, but we see both the English and the Amish world kind of combine in the story. But there are other elements at play as well. For instance, there's illegal moonshiners that are active around the area, so there's a danger that's attached to that. There's also an old coal mine up on Black Mountain that's been closed for years, but it is kind of the focal point of the area. Through the years, it's been a hangout for teenagers, both English and Amish, and it's also the location where the young Amish woman went missing years ago. So for me, keeping all these details sorted out, it certainly added to the challenge of writing Amish Country Killer.
And that leads us to our next question. What was the hardest part of writing this book?
For me, the hardest part was the ending. It was very hard to write. It's sad, and it was when the villain's identity is finally revealed. I hope it'll be a surprise for the readers. I know it was for Diana and Micah, and it was definitely very hard to write.
All right, yeah. Sometimes those endings can be difficult. I've had a couple books like myself like that, Mary. So we're going to close our short time together with what's one thing you want readers to know about Amish Country Killer?
I hope my readers will see that the story is a story about second chances and hope and faith above all else. Despite the darkness that Diana and Micah have dealt with in their past and the darkness that they deal with throughout the story, they get a second chance at happiness, and I love that. And I also love writing stories that remind us that no matter what we're going through, we're not there alone. God is always with us throughout whatever we're doing, and I hope the readers will see that in the book.
I hope they do, too. So thank you so much for sharing about your book today.
Thank you, Sarah.
I am delighted to welcome back Joanna Davison-Politano to talk about her latest romantic suspense, The Curious Inheritance of Blakely House. So welcome back, Joanna.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
So we're going to start with your heroine, and I like that you picked this question because I think as we write complex characters, there are things that our characters believe. So what lie does your heroine believe in this story?
Oh, this book was so much fun to write for this heroine because she kind of sees herself as a broken person. She's just put together a little bit differently. She approaches the world differently. She's not good at people. So she doesn't have a whole lot of relationships, but she's brilliant at tinkering and just figuring out the way things work. So she goes into a house where all of these clocks have been disassembled and then re-put back together for a completely different purpose. So they don't work as clocks anymore, but they have a different special purpose. And she kind of saw herself in that. And it was so much fun. Writing somebody who had, her brain was just built a little bit differently, and for her to see, like, the value in that.
Oh, yeah, I love that. That's really cool. I like the clock stuff, too. Fun. What about your hero? What was his favorite pastime in this story?
Well, he's a former adventurer, so he can't sit still, and he loves to travel, but he's stuck. He's been injured, so he's become the butler of this house, this very odd house. And so he's trying to learn how to put things together because this house is owned by an industrialist who has all these unfinished gadgets. So he's trying to jump into what he does, but his heart is just to travel and experience new things like he did for many, many years aboard a ship. And then the heroine is deathly afraid of change. So that's a fun pairing.
Yeah. That is a fun pairing. So what about the villain in this story? Why did you decide to make this person the villain?
I went through a lot of the book not even knowing if there was a villain. But then one guy kind of emerged. And I liked him for being the villain because he had like a decent personality. He had a noble purpose. Everything that he did was for his son and to try to reconnect with his son. And so he discovered a way to have kind of all of this power over people and be manipulative, which drove his son away from him. But to him, it was like, you know, my son kind of saw me as weak, and so now I can appear strong. So he has all these motives of trying to reconnect with his son. He's just going about it the wrong way. So I think that was a really fun thing to play with. He wasn't just out and out evil. He was just kind of misguided.
Yeah, I think they're more complex. I mean, some people are pure evil, but so many of them are just misguided, whatever, right? Trying to do something, but going about it in the wrong way.
Right.
That's always fun.
Yeah.
Always fun to give our villains that little bit of humanity, little more humanity, I like to think of it. Mm-hmm. So what about the place that you based it on? I'm assuming it's a fictitious place, but did you base it on something real?
I did. So in the area of Northumberland where it's set, there are a series of islands called the Farne Islands. And so I made up a new island and added it to the collection. But then the house itself was one of my favorite things to research. It's based on a house that was owned by a lawyer turned industrialist, and he powered the entire thing with hydroelectricity, with water pressure. And he had all of these really, really interesting inventions, and some were kind of half finished. But he had like an electrical dishwashing machine, a dumbwaiter, all these lights that sit on a dish of mercury, and you turn them on and off by shifting them across the table. And just all of these really cool gadgets. So I just added to his collection, but it was a lot of it was based on a real house and real inventions.
And that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a house I'd like to visit.
I know. It looks so interesting. I watched so many videos on it and read a lot of things that he invented. And he had this giant mansion, and he had, you know, doors that could open and close, and just so many automated things that it was kind of like a smart house, but in the Victorian era.
Yeah. So what was the easiest part of writing this story?
Oh, the easiest part was probably the research, but in general, I think my hero and heroine go on an adventure partway through the book. And that is when the book really took off for me, and I couldn't even write fast enough. It was just so much fun because she was terrified because she doesn't like adventures unless they're in books. But he was in his element, and so she got to see that. And then she also kind of got to live out what she read about in books but was afraid to do. And they had to lean on each other in a different way, the hero and the heroine. Mm-hmm. And there was just a lot going on. There were a lot of twists and a lot of fun things that came up that I wasn't expecting either. And that was, I think, when the story took on depth for me, a whole lot of depth. And it went from interesting to, like, thought-provoking.
Yeah, those are the best kind. Best kind to read, best kind to write. Well, we're going to close our time together, Joanna, with what's one thing you want readers to know about The Curious Inheritance of Blakely House?
Oh, it is definitely for those people who feel a little bit on the outside or just like they don't quite fit in with what society expects or demands. Whether it's, you know, being a little disorganized or scatterbrained or not real good with people or whatever, this is definitely the story with that type of heroine in mind.
Oh, well, thank you so much for sharing about that on my show today.
Oh, I appreciate you having me.
I'm delighted to welcome back Jessica R. Patch with her latest psychological thriller, romance, well, not a lot of romance, but suspense definitely book, The Other Sister. So welcome back, Jessica.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks so much for having me. It's good to be back.
So we're going to, since this isn't strictly a romance, there is a male, a male point of view a little bit in this story. I like to imagine that maybe after the story there's more romance. But, so we're going
to
have two questions. Yeah. I like it. So we're going to talk about two questions for the heroine instead.
Right.
So what lie does your heroine believe in this story?
My protagonist in The Other Sister is Charlotte Kane, and Charlotte has had a lot of trauma in her past, and she believes that if she just had the right education or the right family to have grown up in, or all of the things, the material possessions, that her life would be different. She thinks it's all about the things that she could have tangibly that will bring her contempt.
Yeah. And don't we all believe that sometimes?
Sometimes we may say one thing, but we find that we're running after things to make us happy and bring us peace and contentment, but we're never going to find that in any other person, place, or thing than Jesus.
Yes, yeah, that's so true. And you mentioned her name, Charlotte. So why did you pick this particular name for her?
That's a good question. Charlotte means purity, I believe. And I thought that was an interesting take because her life's been so muddy. And a lot of times when I'm picking names, I try to pray about their names and pray about who they are. And sometimes the name will just pop in my head. And then when I go to look it up, the meaning is so good. And so that is just something I would tell authors is to definitely pray about your stories and your character names, because the Lord will drop it into thought. And it's usually just the very most perfect name, even if it's ironic, you know, it's perfect. Mm-hmm. So that's how Charlotte came to be.
I love that. Yes, definitely. You know, as Christian authors, it's one of the things that I love, that we can pray about our work. Yes, we're making up stories, but we can still pray about that because this is what God has called us to do. Okay, no more side trips.
Right.
Let's get back to the other sister. What's one redeeming quality about the villain in this story?
There are no redeeming qualities here. Yeah. In the villain of this story, I mean, the villain is a sociopath, and in this particular instance, narcissistic sociopaths typically don't have redemptive qualities, unfortunately. Mm. I mean, they don't. So as far as the villain, and sometimes she's her own villain, and she has redemptive qualities because she is searching. She's open-minded for what can bring her contentment, and I think that's true of all of us. Sometimes we're our own worst enemy and to ourselves. So.
Yes, yeah, that is so true. We often are doing stupid things to sabotage ourselves. Yes, always fun. So the story's setting. Why this particular setting for this story?
So this story is mostly set in Savannah, Georgia. And I thought that this was a beautiful place. Originally, I had it set in St. Louis when I first wrote it. And then after I came home and revised and was praying about it, it's such a charming, southern, elegant place. But there's so much darkness going on that I thought it was a really good play on how we masquerade sometimes and what looks really elegant and charming on the outside, and then we get to the inside, it's dark and sometimes wicked and vile. And so I thought it was a good parallel for what's going on in the hearts of people and in our own hearts.
Yes.
Those whitewashed tombs.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And I love how we can, as writers, we can use settings to kind of emphasize that as a part of our story. So you've talked about that there's some dark themes in this book, but I know that there's an underlying positive message of the story. So share what that is.
So the message that I'm exploring through Charlotte's story is that contentment can only be found in Jesus, that you're not going to find it anywhere else, and that no matter what your traumatic past is, and hers is pretty heavy, no matter what that is, there is always hope for a future in Christ Jesus. And that's the main takeaway from that story, or at least what I hope readers will take away, that you can make the right choices. Sometimes we want to choose the easy route because it's easy, but it's the wrong choice. The right choice is often the hardest choice that we have to face, and that we have to face our consequences for the bad choices and the sinful choices that we make. And so all of that in a culmination becomes the other sister.
Ah, I love that. So we are almost out of time, Jessica. So share, let's close our time and share, what's one thing you want readers to know about your book?
I want readers to know that there is a place for darker themed fictional stories, that the backdrop, those things that happen in the story, that whether it's trauma, that all of these dark things, they are real and they happen in the world. And I think there's a place for that in the market, and that if they can look really closely, they'll see through a lot of symbolism. They'll see a Christ type in Christian Patrick, who's the detective, they're absolutely going to see the gospel message and Christ redeems, and he is our only hope and our source through the story. And I really want readers to know that, because it is a dark mainstream type thriller, but it's clean, and there's so much there regarding Jesus. It's just more in biblical truth, principles, and symbolism.
Ah, I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing about The Other Sister on my show today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm delighted to welcome Tracy Summerall to my show. She's going to talk about her romantic release, Secrets Beneath the Snow. So welcome to my show, Tracy.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I almost like got a little tongue-tied on Secrets Beneath the Snow.
Yeah, a lot of S's.
Yeah, a lot of. I like the alliteration. But anyway, I get off topic. We're going to start with your heroine, and how does she feel about love at the beginning of this story?
My heroine is on the run, so love is way off of her radar right now. She doesn't want love. For one thing, she doesn't want to pull anybody into the trouble she has found herself in. So she is not even thinking about love right now.
Oh, what about your hero? Sounds like maybe something might be holding him back from finding love as well.
Yes, he had, everyone in his life has not stayed. So he has this fear, this misconception that no one's going to stay for him. So he's very cautious when it comes to that, and is kind of nervous about love and falling for someone who's just going to leave him.
Yeah, well, I'm sure somehow I think they might have their happily ever after, but I'm not going to give anything away.
Just a hunch, huh?
Yeah, just a hunch. So what about your villain? What motivates your villain in this story?
Well, he is actually a high-profile character, and he's in this position, and he's very corrupt. And so his whole motivation is to keep his secret. He doesn't want anyone finding out about his secrets, because it could ruin everything that he's worked for.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say in protecting himself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what about the story's setting? I'm guessing there's snow, but why did you pick this particular setting?
There is snow. It takes place in the mountains of Colorado, and I actually live here in the mountains, and I'm a mountain girl and love the mountains. And it's just a place that, because I love it, I'm able to portray that. And I have kids who love skiing, and husband who loves skiing. And so it's just really feels like home to me. And so it makes it fun for me to write that and to share that with readers and others.
Wonderful. And what about the genesis of the story? Where did the idea for Secrets Beneath the Snow come from?
Well, we bought a little puppy. You know, when you have young kids, what do? You get a puppy. So I had a friend who bred some black labs, and we bought our little puppy. And I was actually at a friend's house, and he started talking about how when his girls were young, they had a black lab. And he said they were all out camping one night, and all of a sudden the campsite was in a big frenzy because this little girl had gone missing, a little girl within the campsite. And so everybody kind of was getting up and trying to help find this little girl, and she was just a toddler. And pretty soon his black lab comes leading the little girl back into the camp. And...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that black lab never even had any training. It just instinctively found her and led her back to people. And so it just really inspired me, and it really led to like a fascination about rescue dogs and what they do and how loyal they are to their handlers. And when I started having that fascination, I really wanted to write about some rescue dogs. And so that's where that came about.
Oh, I love that. And what a great story. Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
It was really cool.
Yeah, it is. It just is. It's this really cool story, and I'm glad you're able to kind of, use that as an impetus to write this book. But we're going to close our short time today with what's one thing you want readers to know about Secrets Beneath the Snow?
Well, it's a fast-paced mountain adventure, and it's got some survival in it. It's got some, danger, and from the villain, and so. I just really hope readers like it, and it's my first, so I'm hoping that it's enjoyable for everybody.
Well, thank you so much for being on our show and sharing about your book.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, my guest is Tracy Summerall. She's a Colorado girl who loves the outdoor mountain life, and she also enjoys writing about it. So welcome to my show, Tracy.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So you mentioned in some of the information you sent me ahead of our interview that you have kids and a puppy and a dog and a husband. And so where do you find time to write? That's a busy life.
It's a busy life. It's a little crazy around here. I'm also a music teacher, and so things get really hectic for us. Because it's just something that I really have in my heart to do, and I get up early. I get up before my kids and before my husband, before the dog, and I take about an hour to write. And then I go and I get all the kids up and around, and I have it scheduled. I have it scheduled so I know that I write first thing in the morning, and then I also have certain times throughout my day that I have sectioned off, and I just can't miss those times. And that's what I use to write with.
And when do you need to pick up, like a pick-me-up, when to keep writing? What's your go-to for that?
Oh, I call a friend. I have met the most wonderful people through my writing journey, and some of them are just become such dear friends to me. And I know I can always call them. And writing can be pretty isolating. And so when I can call another writing friend, and I can just say I'm stuck with this scene, or what am I doing here? She can kind of help talk me through it. And so I'm really grateful for my writing friends, because it's very wonderful to have them around.
It is. It definitely is. And when we can make those connections, it can definitely help us get over the hump, whether it's we're stuck or we're just not feeling it, or we feel, there can be a million reasons why we're not wanting to write. So, it's always good when we have close friends who are writers to kind of help get us on. And I think it's true for any part of life, right? As long as you have good friends to kind of help you through the tough patches, whatever those look like, that can be so great. This is a question that I get a lot, and my answer, I think, disappoints readers when they ask me, but, where do you get the inspiration for your plots? And I feel like when I get asked that question, Tracy, and I answer it, I say, well, anywhere and everywhere. It's hard to say there's just one slice that I can go, yes, I get all mine from reading newspaper articles. Well, sometimes it's an article. Yeah. Sometimes it's something I see, over here or see. It could be a bit from a movie. It could be something my kids says, something I read in a book. I mean, there's just not one source. So let me hear your story and see if your inspiration for plots is a little bit more satisfying, because they always seem disappointed.
As writers, we're always looking, and we always have our radars up, and all of a sudden we'll just hear a phrase, we'll just hear, a story from somebody, and it just kind of inspires us. And I know that I get a lot of my inspiration when I'm out and about with my kids, when we, when we go camping, or, when I hear their stories about skiing, because I ski, but not much like they do. So I get a lot of inspiration from from those stories and from just being in the outdoors a lot, and taking drives, you know, out and just, I love taking a drive, and just sometimes it just really helps me to see the scenery and to take it in, and there's something about it, I don't know, nature, that really helps inspire me.
Well, we're a camping family as well, and although I'll just be honest, we do have a camper. I am not sleeping in a tent, and if there's not flush toilets, I'm not going. All right, now that we have that out of the way.
I'm kind of in the same boat, and so it's kind of, my kids are a lot more adventurous than I am.
Yes, I'm not going backpacking up in the mountains. Sleeping in a tent. I'm not doing it. All right, you know, just I've reached a point in my life where I'm not, and it's fine. No, you know, but we still like to get out into nature and to unplug and to just kind of, you know, enjoy it and recalibrate. And it is just a wonderful opportunity. And I think part of it, and maybe I'll start saying this, because this might resonate more when people ask me the inspiration. Mm-hmm. I said partly it's the fact that I try not to be connected to a device all the time. Like if I'm waiting at the doctor's office, I don't always whip out my phone. Sometimes I just sit there. Just letting your mind just kind of wander hither and yon kind of thing can really bring some of those plot ideas and to fruition, to mine, allow it to percolate, because they're not like, you know, a neon flashing sign, plot idea, take me, you know, they're usually, you have to think about them for a while, or they're gone, you know, if you just think, oh, that'd be interesting, and then you don't do anything about it right then, that ain't coming back.
There's definitely something about just unplugging and just letting your mind create and giving it space to create without distractions is just, I look for those opportunities.
I mean, in camping, it allows those, and allows our kids to have times where you're unplugged and you're undid, because a lot of places we go, I mean, they may bring their cell phone, but it ain't going to be working.
Yes, that's sure. Yep, sure true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Let's go get, not really lost, but let's go get, you know, have fun in the woods and come back. So, how do you connect then with your character? So we've talked about inspiration, and how do you connect with your characters when you're writing?
I think the best way I have found is I journal about them. I kind of get into their heads, and I just kind of start journaling about what I see them doing and who they are and a lot of their past. Like I just kind of pretend they're telling me their backstory and what they've been through and their hurts and their pains and their wounds and, you know, if there's any lies that they believe, because we all have those lies that we are, we want to believe, and trying to fight against those lies. And so I have found that if I just sit down in a journal and then, it's kind of like me telling a story, even though it's just to myself. And it just, it's really fun to see how they just start to develop and how they become people.
That is so true. Yes, definitely. I used to not find pictures for them, but now I do, because I do find that helps me as well. And I usually don't jot down too much information about them, mostly because I'm lazy and that seems to take a long time and I'd rather spend time writing. I know, I'm such a lazy writer. But I, you know, I'll build it, I'll add to it as I'm writing, so I won't, you know, forget what color eyes they have and how does their hair look like and stuff like that. But I think it is good to, you know, the more we know, the more richer we can write them, but it just, we all have eyes. It's interesting to hear how different people connect with their characters.
Sure, absolutely.
We'll do like music, you know, music lists, food. I mean, some people go really deep, and I'm like, I don't think I want to do that deep. Just, I mean, I may have it in my brain, but I just don't want to get it on paper.
Sometimes so as you write the story, they develop even more. And so, you know, sometimes it's just writing the story helps you get to know them too.
Yeah, definitely. I always say that, you know, my characters kind of talk to me and they're like, no, I'm not going to do that. Yes, you might have thought this, but uh-uh. And then they'll do something, and then later I'm like, oh, that's why they did that. Huh.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
right.
So, yeah, I'm a little strange. So, all right, well, let's move on to what did you want to be when as a kid? And did you – I like this question, too. And did your dream come true? Are you who you wanted to be as a kid?
Yes. Well, it's not ever as I imagined, that's for sure, as a kid. And – but I did. I used to be in third grade, and I'd be on the jungle gym writing stories, and I loved it so much. And I didn't know if I really, I mean, in my heart, I don't know if I was like, I want to be a writer. It was just something I did. And it wasn't until college and that I really felt God say, hey, you know, the stories that you have, those are not meant to keep to yourself. And so I started exploring what it would mean to be a writer. And it's sometimes it's funny how God takes us, because even that was what was in my heart to do. He also led me to be a teacher.
Mm.
And I have found a real love for teaching my students and being in the classroom as well. And so it's funny how, you know, at that time in college, how I thought it was going to look. It really didn't look like that in the long run. And, but he's still, you know, is starting to bring it to fruition, and to have had that dream and now to have my book published is like, you know, I just feel blessed and excited, and it's kind of, you know, so it is my dream coming true. It's just kind of, you know, the beginnings of it, and it's really exciting to watch.
Oh, yes. And, I wrote a lot of stories when I was a little girl, and I always wanted to be a writer, and I am. So, I mean, that was my profession before I wrote for magazines and stuff like that, before I wrote books.
Right.
But, yeah, so I would say my dream came true, and, yes, it was a lot different than I thought it was going to be. But still a lot more fun. A lot of fun.
Right, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right. Well, we are out of time, Tracy. I'd love to keep talking, but thank you so much for sharing about writing and your journey on my show today.
Thank you so much. I really had fun.
I'm welcoming back Jessica West to talk about her latest romantic suspense, Poisonous Cuisine. So welcome back to my show, Jessica.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
We're going to dive right in and get started with your heroine. What lie does your heroine believe in this story?
Her name's Sarah. She believes that she doesn't deserve happiness because of her past sins.
Okay. What about your hero? What's a character flaw that your hero wants to overcome in this story?
Well, one is his name's Sebastian. He's an alcoholic, and his biggest thing is he thinks he has no purpose because his desire is just to drink away his problems. That's like his biggest flaw.
Ah, yeah, that would be one I think he might need to overcome for the heroine to want to be with him.
Yeah.
And what about the villain in this story? What motivates your villain?
Okay, money. And I'm going to keep that short, so I'm just going to say money.
Okay, yeah, money. Yes, money can definitely get us into a world of trouble when we want it more than anything else. That is for sure. What about the setting in this story? What was the biggest challenge in writing the book in the particular setting?
It's in East Tennessee. It's a real place. So the biggest thing is just making sure that I get all the details right or close to accurate, you know?
Yes. Yeah, I sent my books in Northern Virginia where I live, and, yeah, trying to make sure you get everything accurate is important. I do take a few liberties because I think you have to, but it is definitely important to keep those things as accurate as possible. And I love this question, Jessica. It's one of my favorites and the ones I offer authors to talk about their books. What is the underlying positive message of Poisonous Cuisine?
That God can take your past with all your guilt and your shame and he can turn your life into something beautiful, a beauty that only God's grace could do. That's like a positive, you know, message. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I love how, as Christian authors, we can give that hope and that those positive message in our stories, even when we write, have to write about dark things because people do bad things in our books. So, yeah. I love love that. That's a beautiful positive underlying message. And we're going to close our short time together with, what's one thing you want readers to know about Poisonous Cuisine?
Okay, the characters are fictional, of course, but the underlying problems are real. And Jesus is the only way that we can be overcomers. So I want the readers to look past the characters and see a God who's alive, who's able to bear your burdens and give you what you need to live.
Ah, I love that. That's just wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing about this book on my show today.
Hey, thank you.
I am delighted to welcome Carol Newhouse to my show to talk about her new romantic suspense, Hidden Colorado Danger. So welcome, Carol.
Thanks for having me.
So what past experiences has had the most impact on making your heroine who she is today in this story?
Well, 5 years before the book opens, she was involved in a horrific accident with her husband, and her husband wound up getting killed. And she wound up with a terrible fear of heights. And she's kept this fear secret because she's afraid that if people find out that she's afraid of heights, they'll think it impacts her ability to be the sheriff and they'll work to get her removed. So it's made her guarded and she dislikes change. And she has to manipulate the environment so that she avoids getting stuck on a balcony, for example, or stuck on a fire escape.
That's good. And what about your hero? What is his greatest regret in this book?
His greatest regret is he was a big hotshot tech savvy crime analyst in a big city. And he was rising up, you know, the media favorite, everything else. And all of a sudden something happened and he fell out of favor. And when he fell out of favor, instead of getting fired, he was transferred to Tinker, which is where the sheriff lives. And the transfer to Tinker is billed as he's supposed to help them solve a serial burglary case that's been going on for 6 months. And then he can come back to the big city and resume where he left off. So he arrives at this tumbleweed town. He thinks it's a tumbleweed town. And he, you know, these people are barely computer literate. So he's stuck out here and he's supposed to be working. It's like having his hands tied behind his back. He's got none of his tools. And furthermore, he thinks the sheriff kind of resents him being there, which she does. So we have the two characters at the start and she doesn't want to work with him and he doesn't want to work with her, but they got to work together. And the book goes from there.
Yeah, I love that. That's great. So what character did you have the most fun writing in this book?
Well, actually two. One was, there's a couple of commissioners in the book. And one commissioner, Tom, is the nemesis of the sheriff. I mean, he is a bad boy. He wants to get rid of her. He's always trying to manipulate people and dig up dirt on her and make himself look good in front of the press and all the dirty tricks you can imagine. And he was fun to write because I used to work in a law office. So I'm used to people trying to pull dirty tricks on each other. So I just kind of thought about that when I wrote him. And the other fella is a character, Harvey Klingshot. And he's a blusterous character. He's in the theater. And he buffoons his way through life. He often gets things wrong, but he's good-hearted. And the thing that I think readers should realize by the end of their experience with him is he may seem like a buffoon, but he actually has important information to convey. So you can't just dismiss somebody because they seem to get it wrong or they're boisterous and they're outlandish, that they have something to contribute. So I enjoyed working with both of those guys.
Yeah, they do sound like fun, Carol. And what about the setting? It sounds like Tinker is a fictitious place. And so, what did you base it on?
I based it on Manitou Springs, and I kept it fictional because I didn't want to get stuff wrong. I went to Man through Manitou Springs maybe 30 years ago, and I was delighted with it. It's a charming town. But what I really remembered was it had a lot of different terrains, which meant it gave me a lot of spots where I could put action scenes in, like different spots, rivers or mountains and gullies and lots of different terrain that I enjoyed. And it has some landmarks that I've set some romantic scenes in that were good too. So it offered a lot of variety that I liked.
Right. And so, what about the storyline? Is there an underlying positive message? And if so, what is that?
Yeah, there is actually. The storyline is that no matter how far apart people seem to be, usually you can find some common ground. And maybe the common ground that you find is possible after you've been forced to interact with this person for a while. In other words, you would never interact with the person voluntarily, but now that you're forced into a situation, there's actually, some likable things about them or some ways to do things that might work out better than if you just did it on your own in your usual way. So I want people to think about that, particularly in this time of divisiveness.
Yes, that's always good. Well, we are going to close our short time together with what is your book's tagline?
The tagline is: an old-fashioned sheriff is forced to work with a technologically savvy crime analyst to catch a serial burglar and solve a murder.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing about Hidden Colorado Danger on our show today.
Thank you.
And my next guest is Dani Petri, who's going to talk about her upcoming romantic suspense, 2 Seconds Too Late. So welcome back to my show, Dani.
Thanks, Sarah. I appreciate you having me back.
So we're going to talk about your heroine, and this is also one of my favorite questions. Well, I do love all my questions, but this one I like too, about the pet. So if your heroine could or has a pet, what would it be, and what would the name of the pet be?
Sure. So I think Riley would have a Newfoundland, which is actually what we own, but I think she would have them because she loves big, fluffy, cuddly things. And the name would be Winnie after Winnie the Pooh because that was her favorite childhood character. And Pooh is just soft and cuddly.
I love that. You might have to pretend give her a dog now, I think.
Right? I know. I might have to.
So let's talk about your hero. Where did he grow up?
So he grew up in Boston, and lived there until he was 18, and then he went into the Naval Academy, so he was in Annapolis, served in the military, ended up in getting out and going to Arizona, which I'm actually currently in as we're doing this interview, and then settled in New Mexico where the series takes place. So he's done some traveling.
Yeah, Boston to the Southwest is a little bit definitely
Big
different.
change.
Big
Yes,
change.
it is. Yes.
Yeah. So let's talk about the villain. Why did you want to make this particular character your villain in this story?
Sure. So I kind of came up with what the kind of suspense or crime scenario was going to be. And I pictured kind of who the villain was going to be. I just had an idea of him in my head. And I kind of thought he was like a low-level crook. And then as I got into the story and started writing the draft, because I don't really plot very much, he just got worse and worse and ended up being a pretty devious villain. And I hadn't actually seen that coming. And my editor was like, "Okay, he came out different than planned." And I went, "That's why I don't plot, because they don't say how I plan them." So it kind of suited him and went with, like, his motivations and why he was doing what he was doing, and kind of felt like it all wrapped together for me.
Oh, yeah, I love it. They do talk to us, our characters, and they tell us different
They
things, even the
do.
bad guys. So
yes, they do. That's true.
Yeah. So now I know you already mentioned that the story is set in New Mexico, but why this particular setting?
Sure. So I grew up in Northern Virginia, and we moved to New Mexico when I started high school. So I had that kind of East Coast to New Mexico move. And I went to college there, met my husband there. Even though we grew up an hour apart on the East Coast, we met at the University of New Mexico. And we got married, and we were expecting our first child. And we loved it there. We just had such great memories out there. And we ended up moving back to the East Coast, but it was a special time for us. And I love it's funny because I'm such a beach girl, but I love the desert too. And I love the rugged mountains, and there's just so much about it that's beautiful. And I thought, you know, I always set my stories near coastal areas. It might be fun to do the desert for one. So I decided to kind of go back to my time there and set it in New Mexico.
I love that. I love how we can move things around a little bit. What do you think is the underlying positive message of this story?
So I think it really is, you know, Grayson in particular has a really hard time with some things from his past and dealing with them in the present. And, you know, I really think that if we are struggling to see God in the present, if we look back kind of in the rearview mirror, we can look back and see his presence even when we didn't, you know, quote unquote, feel it, and see how he walked with us in the past. And that can remind us that he's with us now and that he will continue to be with us in the future. And that doesn't take the heart away. You know, life is messy, but God sees the full picture on the tapestry. We just see the mess in the back. And so it's just knowing God's in control, God's always with us, and God sees what the perfect plan is. And we, you know, trusting in him can leave that in his hands.
Oh, I love that. So we're going to close our short time together, Dani, with what is your book's tagline?
Oh, yes. So the book's tagline is One Missing Woman, Two Hit Men. When every second counts, he will survive.
Ah, I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing about 2 Seconds Too Late.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.